The flexibility in this disaster funding is very broad. The uses of funds and statute is extremely broad. Almost anything can be allowable if it's properly documented. But if they don't document it, it's an audit finding. So they have to show that it was caused by the pandemic, the need for the activity was caused by the pandemic, or the need was increased by the pandemic. So they have to show a tie to the ESSER statute, tying the activity to the actual COVID-19 pandemic. And then the last one is actually pretty easy. It's aligning the activity to a statutory allowable use of funds. So there's a lot of allowability, a lot of flexibility, and almost anything can be allowable. So most any need that they can identify aligning to the statute, most any of those needs, they can tie it to an allowable use of the money. But what's really different in this federal money for LEAs is the fact that supplanting is allowed. And under the first ESSER 1 and ESSER 2, that were passed under the previous administration, supplanting at the state and district level was actually encouraged. New administration releases ESSER 3, and they have a slightly different view. Although it is still allowed in the statute to supplant, they are much more restrictive on what they think the intent of the federal statute was. And it's more limited. The intent was more likely for districts to be able to have the flexibility to supplant the funds if needed. One of the other things that's extremely different about this federal funding for school districts is the broad and flexible use of funds. Number one allowable use of fund is any activity allowed under ESA, IDEA, Perkins, Adult Family Literacy. So you have a broad range of federal statutes, and anything that's allowable under those federal statutes is automatically allowed under ESSER. And then you have a list of additional activities that are more pandemic-type related. So you have a lot of flexibility. The problem that's coming out of that is people are telling school districts, pay that cost with ESSER. But it's not everything. So school districts are starting to have audit concerns because, number one, they didn't document the allowability, and number two, they used things that did not tie to the statute, so it was not allowable costs because everybody thinks everything is covered under ESSER. Almost everything, but not everything. There are things that are not allowed, and if it's not documented properly, it can't be used for that purpose. Another thing that's different is that there are specific plans that are required under ESSER 3. Now, all federal grants that LEAs receive, they have to have a basic plan for how they're going to spend the funding and how it's going to be allowed and how it's going to meet the intended beneficiaries of the federal statute. Under ESSER 3, districts have to have two additional plans, and these were brought about not by statute, but by an interim final rule that was implemented by the Department of Education. So the first plan is the Return In-Person Instruction and Continuity of Services Plan. That plan is required to be updated, reviewed, and potentially updated every 6 months, and it's required to be posted on the LEA's website. Second plan is a use of funds plan describing how the district plans to use the ESSER funding to meet the needs of the students, both academic, social, emotional, and mental health. Anytime their application is amended for a significant change in how they're using the money, the use of funds plan has to be amended. Both of those plans required stakeholder engagement practices and required involvement a large variety of people within their community to help the district determine how the plans should be developed and how the money should be used. Another audit concern is if we have started monitoring the compliance with these planning requirements, we started monitoring 300 districts and charter schools. We've gotten 211 of them reviewed up to compliance. They weren't all compliant, but we work with them to get them compliant. We still have 79 that are in the process. The biggest things that showed up in this validation is the plans were not being translated into other languages other than English. Or the district had a button on their website that translates the website, and they thought when they hit that button, it would translate all the attached plans, No, that button translates the website. It translates the link, but the plan is still in English when you click on it. So there was translation problems for compliance, and then there was a lot of issues with stakeholder engagement. The federal rule outlined all these different groups of people that had to be involved in the types of processes that had to be used to involve stakeholder engagement in the development of the plan. And what we found was that a lot of time districts wanted to follow their normal processes. They wanted to bring these plans and surveys and all these activities through their site-based decision-making committee or currently existing committees that they had within the district. And that process is totally fine and can be totally allowable if all these representative groups listed in the final rule are included on those committees. Most of the time, they're not. So we've had issues there in compliance as well. We continue to work with districts to get them compliant. We intentionally monitor compliance during the life of the open grant. So if there's problems, we can work with the district and charter school to fix the problems. If they get audited at the end of the grant cycle or after the grant has closed and there's a problem, they automatically refund the money. We work with the districts to fix the problems, fix the expenditures, change them out with other allowable expenditures so they don't have to pay the money back, because we know in the middle of the pandemic, the last thing districts need is to come to the end of this and have to pay a whole bunch of money back to the federal government because they didn't cross their T's and dot their I's.